101.1 FM. Coming up next is Disability Beat, but before that, programming at WEFT is brought to you in part by Minuteman Press. Whether you need signs for an event, thousands of full-color flyers, or personalized promotional items, Minuteman Press can make it happen in time and on budget. They offer an extensive line of products as well as design services. Minuteman Press may be reached online at cuprinting.com, in person at 905 South Neal Street in Champaign, or by calling 217-355-0500. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a pre-recorded interview with IWSI America President Nicholas Wyman on a 2023 report called Willing and Able, Why It Pays to Hire People with Disabilities. But first, disability news for the week of September 25th, 2023. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services announced last week that 30 states had dropped qualified recipients from Medicaid while working through their redetermination processes. To date, 500,000 children and families across the country were marked for cancellation and then reinstated to coverage after officials recognized the problem. CMS said that it had required states who made the error to suspend some of their removals while they worked out the issue. The state of Georgia, however, is continuing its disenrollments. According to Fiona Roberts, a spokeswoman for the State Department of Community Health, which oversees Medicaid, said, quote, "The process is ongoing while we continue to assess and mitigate issues as discussed with CMS." Many medical professionals and families are concerned that those who still qualify for Medicaid will be dropped because they lost contact with the state and didn't know they had to reapply. In each case, state workers first must send a letter or email to the Medicaid beneficiary or the adult who handles Medicaid for them, letting them know that they need to refile their eligibility paperwork in order to maintain benefits. However, experts say that families on Medicaid are disproportionately more likely to move and change their contact information. As the state of Georgia specifically works through their redeterminations, more than 80% of those dropped from coverage were dropped for lack of paperwork. The state says it doesn't know how many were actually eligible but didn't know how to respond. The new mistaken removals are related to that concern. Errors started with evaluating entire households that are on Medicaid and not looking at the qualifications of each person in the household, according to a letter sent to the states at the end of August. In one example, if a household includes both adults and children, the children may qualify for Medicaid while the adults don't, regardless of whether the family file the proper paperwork. The state is obligated to look through its databases for those children's individual qualifying information. According to CMS, that did not happen. Instead, they discovered that some states were removing the entire household, qualified children included, based only on the fact that it didn't get paperwork back from the adults in the household. Several states reported tens of thousands of people affected. Pennsylvania and Nevada reported more than 100,000 each. Georgia reported it was still assessing how big the problem was. The federal government is investing some money to address the needs of young people with disabilities as they transition to adulthood. The U.S. Department of Education's Rehabilitation Services Administration said that it will spend almost $199 million to fund model demonstration projects in 20 states that are designed to prepare young people with disabilities for independent living, integrated employment, and community integration. The projects are part of the Rehabilitation Services Administration's Pathway to Partnership initiative that will involve collaboration between each state's vocational rehab agency, educational agencies, and Centers for Independent Living. Recipients of grants will have 5 years to pilot, implement, and refine their plans, as well as collect and analyze data on their results. Glenna Wright Gallo is the Assistant Secretary for the Office of Special Education and Rehabilitative Services, which oversees the Rehabilitation Services Administration. According to Wright Gallo, quote, "The department is committed to providing children and youth with disabilities the supports they need to access self-advocacy training, career pathways, and independent living," end quote. Most of the states selected for the project will get about $10 million each. Funding is going toward initiatives in Alaska, Arkansas, Colorado, Connecticut, Georgia, Idaho, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Maryland, New Jersey, New Mexico, Nevada, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Vermont, Wyoming, and Illinois. And finally, a study led by researchers at the University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio has discovered a link between boys diagnosed with autism and their mothers drinking diet soda or a comparable amount of the artificial sweetener aspartame on a daily basis while pregnant or breastfeeding. No statistically significant link was found in girls born to mothers ingesting aspartame on a daily basis. The case-controlled study found that boys diagnosed with autism were more than three times likely as typically developing boys to have been born to mothers who stated that they had consumed one or more diet sodas per day or comparable amounts of aspartame. Said Dr. Raymond Palmer, senior author of the paper and a professor at UT Health San Antonio's Department of Family and Community Medicine, quote, "Our findings raise new questions about potential neurological impacts that need to be addressed," end quote. The study was published last month in Nutrients, an international journal on human nutrition. According to the study's lead author, Dr. Sharon Fowler, a UT Health San Antonio adjunct assistant professor of medicine, quote, "Our findings contribute to the growing literature raising concerns about potential offspring harm from maternal diet beverage and aspartame consumption during pregnancy," end quote. And that's the news for this week. You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Vicki Nicewander. You're listening to Disability Beat, and I have on the phone today my guest, Nicholas Wyman, who is the president of the Institute for Workplace Skills and Innovation, who has recently issued a really interesting report that we're going to be learning more about today. Welcome to the program, Nicholas.
Thanks for having me on the program. Thank you.
Why don't we start with you introducing yourself first, and then we'll talk a little bit about the Institute and the work that you do there.
Sure, absolutely. So I started my career after high school. I actually didn't complete high school, and I really learned that I like to learn through using my head and my hands. And so I've really spent the last three decades looking for opportunities for people to get engaged in different styles of learning and meaningful work and skilled work. And fortunately, companies are still, you know, looking to hire people, but there is this very strange gap. And I spend my working days connecting employees to employers, designing workforce programs, and that's really what's at the heart of IWSI America, which is a non-profit, a 501c3 that actually has heritage back to 40 years ago.
And where is the company based?
So we're based in California, but we have worked internationally through varying arms and projects. And some of the statistics, or some of the highlights, I should say, we've actually graduated over 20,000 young people globally into apprenticeships.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very excited to share some of that knowledge and that information. And we've got a lot of information contained in our latest report, particularly working with people with disabilities, helping them to, you know, find dream careers. And the message to employers is why it pays to hire people with disabilities.
So how does this, does the Institute often issue reports like this? And are, it's not all disability related, is it?
No, it's not, but it really is where we're spending the majority of our time and focus. We also work with youth apprenticeships across the country. But I suppose the inspiration for this report and all our reports is we want it to be a practical read.
Mm-hmm.
My father was an academic. I'm not an academic. He's no longer alive, but he always felt that I had a he really described me as a practitioner. So our reports are written from a perspective of an employer or a parent or a community group or even an individual. There's not a lot of technical references. It's designed to be a very practical and useful guide. And we're constantly updating it, and we'll be updating the online version with all sorts of links. And we tackle some of the issues which seem, not insurmountable to a lot of people, but it is definitely stopping employers from actually hiring people. They have these biases. Most of them are actually not conscious. Some might be biases. Some might be misconceptions about things like, but how am I going to, get the people to work, or how am I going to deal with this, or how am I going to fund accommodations in the office? So we tackle a lot of those issues. We also look at terminology, but we really try and lead through example of others. So one thing common about all our reports is we feature stories of individuals and companies who've done innovative and interesting things to really move opportunities forward for individuals, and also for the movement of engaging people with disabilities in meaningful work.
It sounds really, really fascinating. So did this start with a survey? Where did you get the information that you gathered for this report?
So we actually spend a lot of time with employers, and we operate some programs with the Department of Rehabilitation in California. And so we've got a lot of interaction with employers, employer groups. And so a lot of the information is coming to us from frontline conversation.
Mm-hmm.
We also undertook some survey work, but it really is very much an experiential report, learning through experiences of others. And it's fantastic when, you know, people would like to, you know, tell their story and break down some of these myths and misconceptions. And one thing that was, you know, I suppose a bit daunting when we started thinking about it was how the whole idea of technology can play a role in assisting. And so there's a great section in there on virtual reality and how that can help solve the training gap.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, a lot of companies, we've got to remember that while this has been going on, we went through COVID, where people started using different forms of technology to train.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're making sure that we've got the latest cutting-edge training, be it through a private training provider, a community college, even higher education. There's so many different ways that you can incorporate training into our programs.
Yeah. So what are some of the discoveries that you made that were first of all, the things that you expected to hear, but also some of the things that weren't expected?
Yeah, so I think a couple of things that I've always had in my subconscious, and we've actually done something about this. When I started on this journey over a decade ago, I realized that we were working with so many people, particularly in their mid to late 20s, early 30s, and they just had not successfully made that school-to-work transition. So one of the areas of focus, we've just launched a new initiative in California called Career Launchpad, and that's really going to be helping school leavers with a disability to launch rewarding careers. And we'll be able to offer not only some technical support and career advice, but some practical experiential learning, so summer camp and all sorts of ways that people can actually get a taste for what it's like to work in a particular industry. So that was something that I did notice and always wanted to do something about. And I must say, I used COVID to really think about how we could get that message out. You know, things that I was expecting, or common things that I hear from employers. Sadly, I have a lot of people who say, Nick, I really love what you do. It's fantastic. What an amazing initiative, or what amazing programs and projects, but not for our company, because, and they start with this long list of why not. And I actually really like that as a place to start the conversation, because whatever the barriers are, whatever the reasons are that you know, employers are potentially leaving huge you know, numbers of available people sitting on the sideline. There's all this talent, yet every other day we hear about employers struggling to find people to fill jobs. And I've really drilled into that in the report and said, well, you know, why is that? And I think one thing that probably frustrates me a little is the status quo in a lot of companies, that you say, but why is that a requirement of this particular job or this function?
Mm-hmm.
And the person looks at you and says, oh, because sort of that's how it was when I got here.
Exactly.
And you start to drill backwards and go backwards. There's actually no logical reason. So I really love working with employers who are open-minded and, you know, realize that that I suppose COVID was an opportunity to, as a contextual marker, draw a line in the sand and say, let's think of a different way to bring people into our organization.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of companies are talking about diversity and inclusion, and you know, I really like to see those that you know, really commit and commit through a program. And you know, it was really interesting in one of the news stories that, you know, that you know, I just heard, you know, really kind of resonates with me about wonderful programs that through lack of funding just see. So one of the things that, you know, we try to build into our programs as far as possible is sustainability, and look at all, you know, look at different ways that we can actually fund and support and substitute, so they're not just reliant on one funding source. I know that's not possible for everyone, but it is such a shame when you see a wonderful program stop through lack of funding.
Yeah, it is a shame. So without going into great and gory detail with the barriers, let's just kind of identify some of the most common things that employers will say to you to, you know, stop you in your tracks.
The first, as I mentioned, quite often it is a discussion about you know, transportation. It becomes a very kind of logistic focused conversation. It immediately goes to that sort of conversation. And I, you know, listen for a little bit, and then I'd say, no matter what the barriers are, list them all for me, list all your concerns. And let's work out a way to work our way around that. And I really have enjoyed working with the DOR in California, and so refreshing when you're working with agencies who have a similar mantra, which is whatever the issues are, let us know and we'll find a way. I had someone call me just recently about a potential program with veterans with a disability, and there was a fairly significant issue in sort of transitioning, and I didn't know the answer, but I did know of where to get the answer from. I know some folks at a public policy institute in DC, and was able to talk to them. So through networks, you can always work through these issues.
Mm-hmm.
But the first step is actually getting employers to start the conversation. So that's one example. I think there's another misconception companies don't have. They try and describe to me they don't have the resources or the structure to supervise and manage. And I really, once again, I start to come back and say, well, it really depends on the type of program that you'd like to run. So recently we talked to an organization in CNC machining. And what we realized is that they had fairly, fairly significant high turnover of employees.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out by implementing a mentoring program that really is a great benefit to the employee. But from an employer's perspective, it's actually smart, because it's actually protecting your investment, because we don't just want to get people jobs, we want them to keep the job. So mentoring is probably something that I'd recommend to everyone listening, particularly, employers. If you're thinking of designing a program, I wouldn't implement any program unless it had some sort of mentoring, and preferably some sort of external mentoring, not just the supervisor, somebody who the employee can talk to and work through issues just while they're getting settled in.
All otherwise known in the field as a natural support. You know?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. But isn't it interesting how quite often things that are fairly intuitive, everything gets so complex, if you know what I mean. And so if you look in their report, I'd say there's nothing in there that hasn't been discussed or hasn't been discovered. There's no secret sauce, as it were. What it really is just getting logical things and sequencing them in a certain way. And I think, the power of working with communities and community organisations, partnerships is something that we really talk a lot about in the report,
mm-hmm.
and in our day-to-day life. That's a great way to, achieve success.
So before we run out of time for this, I want you to answer the question, why does it pay to hire people with disabilities?
The absolute answer to that is that employers have promising projects sitting on the shelf, and they're saying, we can't find people with the skills we need. Having a skilled and trained workforce, and particularly tapping into huge, vast talent pools with people sitting on the sidelines, makes economic sense. It's good for business. It's good for our community. It's great for the economy. And if any employers wanted to reach out to me, my Twitter handle is Nicholas_Wyman. I'd love to get a direct message, or people can find us at IWSIAmerica.org, where these reports are available at no cost. And even if it's just pointing someone in the right direction, we've got a lot of people around the country, a lot of networks who can really help you, whether you're someone looking to start a skills-based career or whether you're actually looking to hire somebody with a disability. No matter what the challenge is, we'd love to hear from you. And no matter which part of the country you're listening to this in, the first step forward is just reaching out to us, and we'll see what we can do. But it really is just, as you know, it's just about this sense of well-meaning work. There's a lot of organisations who I appreciate, offer employment opportunities. We're really raising the bar and saying we want to look at this vast array of careers and opportunities. And just to finish with one example, Southern California, we've just launched a program. It's an apprenticeship program, an earn and learn apprenticeship program. And we've placed about, we're sitting on 60, this has only been running for a year, but 60 people into full-time apprenticeships. Our target is 100, to create 100 apprenticeships. And they're in medical and pharmaceutical in Orange County. So we've picked one region, one industry, and we've got some fantastic occupations there. Dental technicians, medical billers and coders, all sorts of massage therapists. We have some vision impaired people who are actually undertaking massage therapy, and will end up working in hospitals within the region. So there's so many wonderful career options. So, you know, I really hope that, you know, that employers say, wow, I didn't realize there's just so many options available.
Yeah. And just breaking down those barriers and getting employers to know that it's not about disability as this thing. It's not a cloud out there that you have to deal with every kind of disability there is. It's this person, this one person who has the characteristics and the talents and the abilities that can succeed on this job.
Yes, absolutely. And I, you know, with that, there's I was at a panel of four younger people. They're probably in their 20s, and one of the apprentices from the Ready, Willing, and Able program, Joy, who's just recently started an apprenticeship as a medical biller and coder. There was probably 100 business people in the room, and these four young people had everybody absolutely on the edge of their seats when they were talking about all the amazing things that they're doing every day. There was one gentleman who was had something to do with, he was some sort of machining type of apprenticeship where he was actually making components for a piece of a telescope that was launched into space. Just incredible stuff. And I think it really is very much all about, as you say, about the individual. And I think that, you know, it's a great place to start. Wonderful.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining me today. Nicholas Wyman, president of the Institute for Workplace Skills and Innovation. You're doing great work.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the program. Really enjoyed it.
No problem. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week. No, down, gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I will stand. You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Coming up next is Food Sleuth Radio. But before that, I just wanted to mention that our pledge drive, our fundraising drive, is coming up starting on Sunday. You may have gotten your letter in the mail today. Don't be shy. Be sure to go to our website at weft.org and click the Donate Now button. You can make your donation of $90.10 or more and get a nice brand new WEF t-shirt dedicated in your name. Or you can donate at really any amount that you want to express your support of community radio here in our community. We depend on our listeners and our underwriters to keep this radio station on the air. We only do this twice a year, so be sure and support us and do what you can, do what you were able to make your contribution. And without further ado, let's get to Food Sleuth Radio. Thanks for tuning in today.
Hi, welcome to Food Sleuth.